welcome to the Voices of CLO podcast. I'm Liz Lutfi, Chief Learning Officer's Managing Editor, and I'm excited to be your host for this special episode brought to you in partnership with Cornerstone. As we journey toward 2023, I've had the privilege of talking with Chief Learning Officers from across our industry about what's top of mind for them. And today, I'm thrilled to be speaking with the Chief Learning Officer of Cornerstone, Mark Ramos. Cornerstone is a cloud-based people development software provider and learning tech company with 100 million users, more than 7,000 customers, and across 180 countries. As CLO, Mark guides the learning experience at Cornerstone, and he has more than 25 years of experience as a global leader in learning and development. Thank you so much for joining me today, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing well, Liz. Thank you so much for the invitation and really excited to be here.
Yes, absolutely. I'm so excited to dive into this conversation with you today. Folks, we're here to tell you to just take a deep breath because there's no skillpocalypse coming. Nowadays, at this point in 22, it just sort of seems like no matter what newsletter we're reading or what meeting we're in, we're talking about the skills gap, that mismatch between the skills that people have and the skills that organizations are needing. But there is no skillpocalypse. Mark, I want to talk to you a little bit first about that term, skillpocalypse. It made me ponder, and I wanted to know where that term came from. And let's set the stage a little bit for our listeners.
Yeah, it is a very, very interesting term. And I guess there's two ways to look at it, Liz. One is, and perhaps many folks who are listening today, I'm kind of a film fan, kind of a film geek to a certain degree. And there was a really, really famous war film in the 70s called Apocalypse Now. And from that perspective, I was playing with that word in the sense of, I think you're right. I think for the talent industry, the HR industry, obviously from an L&D perspective, there's a really, really interesting sense of anxiety, which I think is a fair word, related to, you know, how can I build the right programs? How can I stay competitive? How can I be innovative to address this big skills need or skills gap? And it's interesting, when I do talk to other companies and talk to peers and even talk to my own team, there is that kind of heightened, I'm not going to say fright, but heightened anxiety of, my gosh, this is loud, this is glaring, this is every day, how am I going to deal with it? Do I have the right budget? Do I have the right systems? Do I have the right skills taxonomy and ontology approach and so forth? And I think to a certain degree, the anxiety is fair. I think we all need to stay competitive and innovative. But the thing which is really interesting is there's like this FOMO, right? This fear of missing out that I'm starting to see more loudly in the industry. And the way I look at it is there is nothing devastating related to your ability or inability to keep up with this whole kind of skills topic. There's no doomsday around the corner, right? There's no skills apocalypse, so to speak. There's nothing coming to the end. It's actually the opposite. And the way I try to frame this with colleagues is, you know, organized skill development has been around for well over 100 years, whether it's in manufacturing, whether it's in research, whether it's in medicine, whether it's in the military, whether it's in IT technology most recently. And so organized skills development, particularly from an adult learning perspective, is not anything new. I think what's really cool, the other side of the apocalypse, so to speak, is the fact that via smarter technologies, via the use of AI, we now have a much better way to understand the value of skills in the sense of skills can be more accurate or accurately defined and accurately used. They can be more relevant for people because of technologies. And if anything, maybe we can build skills faster or bolder or bigger because the use of AI to find the right content or the right expert to fill a skills gap. That's true, and that's happening. You're not missing out. There's no dilemma. If anything, speak with your practitioners that have been working on skills development for years, and the same tricks of the trade, the same toolkit is still super relevant. Proper needs analysis and so forth, performance analysis, that still needs to be done. If anything, again, I think the technology is getting a lot more formidable and I think a lot more useful for L&D and HR and talent professionals globally.
Absolutely. There's a number of things that you said there that were really, really great. I also just love the background of naming skillpocalypse after just an apocalypse. what we're dealing with right now is just a whole lot of change. And change can be scary, but the thing is change is also always constant. We're always dealing with change. And this is just another change that's on the horizon. We're having this conversation at the beginning of November, and I just think it's a great conversation to have as we head into a new year. Mark, my next question for you is, you know, speaking of these past couple of years, why do you think skills have become such a hot topic?
Great question, Liz. I have to give you a very educated, yet somewhat uneducated, I don't know. And I'll tell you why. There's a lot of factors that's driving, I think, communication noise, social noise, cultural noise, everyday noise. So how much of the stuff that we're hearing related to skills is truly not necessary, not valid, not evidence-based, not real, hype? There's that aspect of quote-unquote the noise. Then I think there's the other side where I think if you are thinking about different forms of technology and different forms of innovation that are actually less shiny, but actually more concrete and real, I think that's actually part of the flip side, the other side of the noise. I think the other side too is, speaking just very candidly, and I think a lot of folks listening get this, is I think a lot of companies are somewhat taking advantage of this fright or this anxiety, as I mentioned beforehand, where if you don't change your skills taxonomy, if you don't understand the right type of skill systems, if you're not thinking about skill centricity from a learning design perspective, you're missing the boat. So I think there's a lot of unnecessary, but realistically speaking, predictable marketing and overbranding related to stuff that, again, I think has a lot of heritage and strong legacy. Skills, again, has been around for a long time, but I think a lot of the hype potentially, and it could be very proper, good, sensible hype, but I think a lot of the hype is really around putting a whole new spin on something that's already been in place for such a long time. And then maybe there could be a commercial opportunity around that.
Absolutely. That's some great insight. Today's new world and new rules require a new kind of talent experience. Cornerstone delivers a talent experience platform designed to unlock the limitless potential of your workforce and streamline how you do it. A platform where best-in-class learning meets growth-centric talent tools to deliver the outcomes that matter most. Create an inspiring, personalized, and connected experience across learning, skilling, and mobility. Visit csod.com today. That's csod.com to learn more. So as these new horizons and this new nature of work and learning come closer, there's a lot of trial and error to get things right. And obviously there's a lot of missteps that can happen, which a lot of us view just as learning experiences. As we head into just this world of skills development and skills-based learning, how are vendors currently getting skills wrong? And on the flip side, what are vendors getting right about skills?
Kind of ties back to, I think, the prior question to a certain degree. I don't want to lump all vendors as being part of the hype, so to speak. That's certainly not the case. I think it's maybe related to thinking about overly commercializing the opportunity, where again, maybe there's just a different spin, a different positioning, a different set of marketing campaigns that at the end of the day is kind of talking about roughly a lot of the same traditional ways of adult learning and building competence and performance and so forth. So maybe it is around, I think, the hype or the messaging. On the other side, where I think a lot of vendors are getting it totally right, is really sharing any kind of, for lack of better words, evidence. We have valid set of data. We have critical research conducted via academia or whatever it might be that quote unquote verifies or validates that when we're talking about the importance of, again, I'll use AI as an example, or machine learning, where they can identify just that right chunk of content to help build a skill. I think that's actually becoming very, very valid and very true as well. There's a lot of really interesting vendors that are really focusing in the adaptive learning space, for an example. And the whole kind of adaptive learning construct, Liz, is one where you've got this 40-hour class that you need to complete, and the 40-hour class is on data architecture. Let's just say you're already a data architect and you just need to know half of that, right? 20 hours or so. So how is AI or machine learning going to adapt that 40 hours, just give you the 20 that you need, but not just like in some sort of mishmash, disorganized list of stuff, but actually rebuild it and reconstruct it in a very sensible way. And so I think that's one of the advantages, as an example, where I think a lot of vendors that are in this space are using some of these smarter technologies and smarter approaches to really, really change exactly building muscle and knowledge and capabilities and performance and productivity and happiness, frankly, a lot faster. So I think to a certain degree, there's maybe a little bit too much hype. And then on the other side, I think for vendors and other entities that have the evidence, please, please, please continue to promote, to push, and to maybe look at it less framing it from your branding or the commercial application, but how this can benefit society and maybe even your competition. I think that's more of a healthier, holistic way to look at the future. So I'm really optimistic in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. What you were saying actually sort of reminded me of, I think it was an article that I read from some leading industry expert earlier this year, just about the boom in technology that we're going to be seeing across this past year and leading into next year. And as you were talking about just how vendors are now sort of exploring and using these new forms of AI, automation, immersive learning, all of these things that are coming down the pipeline, it's really exciting. But I think always with that change element, it's always a little daunting. But it's cool to see. It's like we have all these new toys that we get to just play around with. Like we're still kids. We're still learning.
The candy store is still there.
Exactly. Exactly. It just looks a little different. It's a little shinier. It's really cool.
A different form of sugar, perhaps.
And so on the other side of the industry, how are organizations getting skills wrong? And what are they getting right?
I can only just speak to, I guess, my experiences or observations. Now, what are organizations getting wrong? I'm not really sure. I think when you look at maybe certain verticals or industries, it's interesting. Prior to coming on board Cornerstone, I was with Novartis, a pharma company, pharmaceuticals. And then prior to that, I was with Google, tech company in general. So two different kind of approaches here in terms of getting things right or wrong. I think for like highly regulated, compliance-driven companies, such as pharma or manufacturing or a telco to a certain degree, they can't help but get things right because you don't want to get, you know, busted by the FDA or some other governing property that's going to close your site and so forth. So I think in terms of getting skills right, I think anywhere where there are companies that have a high reliance on proper GXP training or SOP, standard operating procedure training, so on and so forth, I think they're really, really struggling to a certain degree to quote unquote get skills right on the regulatory side. But on the other side of the same coin, I think there's a little reasonable and necessary conservative approaches of getting that right, because you don't want to experiment too much with your skills approach for regulated training, because you don't want the threat of closure from, again, some governing body to take you down. So that's really, really interesting when you look at it from like a verticalized perspective. That's not to say that these companies are not focused on getting it right. I just think that there's a little bit more challenge, because at the same time, from a risk perspective, you can't be that overly risky or risk-taking. So that side. And then on the other side, there's more agile, fast-paced, ever-changing, maybe technology companies, or it could be even in the financial sector, where they're willing to take the risk related to what skills needs may be and how that needs to change internal practices and policies and programs and stuff like that. And I think for them, they're in a much more of a more opportunistic opportunity to experiment and to prototype and to build MVPs and to test. And that's something where maybe some verticals can't operate in that fashion to determine what's right or what's wrong. But if you do have that opportunity to do some experimentations, build some prototypes, make sure you're doing that with your demographic, with your audience, with real learners, right? Because in some cases, that type of experimentation is just contained and you're not really experimenting with real guinea pigs, for lack of better words, the real learners in this context. I would say too, that I think there is an opportunity via mediums like this, channels like this, whether you're on the talent side or the CLO side informally, to really promote the fact that we need to find opportunities to help each other, right? There's that old saying of the rising tide lift all boats. And I think via great mechanisms such as this podcast, perhaps, we can find opportunities to share best practices and to help each other. I still think that's the right thing to do, because at the end of the day, if we're able to help build individual performance and happiness, at some point that's going to bubble up to your team, to your function, your division, your company, your community and society. And I'm not trying to be overly idealistic. That's just the reality if we get this right. So I think a lot of companies are getting it right. I think a lot of companies are still asking the right questions. I think a lot of companies are learning from failures. And I think this is all good. At the end of the day, again, how can we share some of these instances and really help each other? I think that's the bigger opportunity.
Absolutely. That's such a great perspective. And across your whole career, I really appreciate you sharing all of that. What you said reminded me of just some of the events and things that we host here at CLO. And what I love to see there is the learning leaders in there and the talent practitioners who love to learn from each other. I think that's one of the fundamental parts of the learning and development industry, is that desire and that passion for learning from one another is there. It's strong.
Yep, absolutely.
Cornerstone is reimagining the world of work. 100 million people use Cornerstone's holistic talent experience platform to help them unite people growth with business success, to unleash limitless potential in their people, to create a work environment that works for everybody. Add the tools, skills, and content you and your people need to power the future-ready workforce. Visit csod.com today. That's csod.com to learn more. My next question for you, as we forge ahead toward this upcoming year, how should the learning and development industry be thinking about reskilling and upskilling?
So for the industry itself, I think it comes down to, again, the importance of sharing. Again, this might sound corny or idealistic, but I think what's happening is there's a lot of direct or perhaps even indirect cooperation that's already occurring that might not be overly visible. So let me give you an example. An example is regarding standards, or an example might be related to open skills taxonomies in this context, where we do know that if everyone is talking about skills and using the same skill definitions, maybe using the same skill categories or taxonomies, if maybe we're looking at not only the definitions and not only the structure or categories and taxonomies, but how we measure, as well as a common understanding of proficiency levels, right? We're all looking at new people and the same kind of construct from a measurement perspective compared to experts and advanced folks or skill needs. So my point here is, I think there's a lot of really, really cool things that are happening related to standards or open technologies, whether it's an open skills taxonomy or open ontology, right? How do the skills data talk to each other? If we can have, I think, a lot more awareness of the benefit of that and how we can help each other in this kind of open construct to do further testing and prototyping across verticals, because there's going to be interesting learned lessons that's going to be benefiting more compliance-driven companies compared to more agile, for lack of better words, companies. So I think that the sharing opportunity regarding standards and taxonomies and open sourcing, what we can open source and share, I think is a really, really good way to look at it. Because that way, we're looking at the overarching opportunity of skilling individuals and communities and society within the same recipe book. But if you want to provide different ingredients related to your particular recipe, that's fine. But the standards and the frameworks and the taxonomies and the openness means, hey, folks, it's really one main, Julia Child's for learning for CLO's cooking book. But how you use different flours, how you use different oils, how you use eggs or not, that's kind of up to you. But ideally, we'll get there. And I think there is that harmonization that's happening, Liz, maybe more subconsciously or not consciously. So we'll see what happens there. But I'm really excited about, again, avenues like this and then other, please go to conferences, please read the right kind of journals and so forth and share and teach each other, right? You know, teaching is learning twice. So for you to be able to teach someone who might not be in your space is also an opportunity for you to build your own capabilities and your own credibility and prestige as appropriate.
I love that. There's some great takeaways in everything that you just said. Some great nuggets. I particularly love that metaphor, the extended metaphor of the cookbook, as I'm learning about skills development and skills-based learning. Metaphors and words help me a lot. So I'm going to keep using that.
Right on.
Yes. My next question for you. So we're going to focus in on CLOs now and their organizations and give them some action items to take away from this podcast. What can CLOs start doing now in their organizations to build a more skill-forward L&D program?
Yeah, great question. I'm going to give you a very, very vanilla and bland response in the sense of, I don't know if you need to do anything radically different. That said, I think we all need to recognize that for so many years, there was the whole dilemma, hey, L&D, when are you going to get a seat at the table? And I think what's happening now is I think L&D is becoming the table. And I think the other folks in the different seats and chairs, whether you're on the operations side, the manufacturing side, the sales side, the retail side, whatever, I think everyone is now starting to have this very necessary, magnified and somewhat myopic view that L&D, we now understand your value a lot more. So I think what's happening now for a lot of, and it's not just CLOs, I think it's everyone in the L&D profession needs to understand that at the end of the day, you're providing a service, you're providing support to enable the business. Doesn't really matter what vertical or company or size of company that you're even in. When you're in that kind of support function, at the end of the day, really, it's about making sure that the business is successful in that certain domain that you specialize in, and in this case, learning. So number one is remember that it's so important to stay close to how the business is judging success and measuring success. What are the business key performance indicators, KPIs, OKRs, goals, objectives, and are you aligning your expertise by being the table, because everybody's staring at you now? Are you aligning your expertise to those KPIs? And by the way, your learning or L&D team's KPIs, they should never stand alone by themselves unless it's your own internal team's development. 90% of your KPIs should be aligned to business KPIs, period. Now, there's different interpretations, but at the end of the day, again, it's really making sure that you are providing a service and your service is to enable business success, and business success looks like this. So that's your target. So that's one thing I would say, Liz, is just making sure that you're closely aligned to the business goals and the business objectives. And by the way, that doesn't really matter if you're an NGO or a nonprofit. The entity does have overarching goals. So make sure you're aligned to that. And then the other thing too is, you know, definitely keep track of what's happening, whether it's shiny, I get it, or whether it's a fad, I get it, or whether it's a formal trend, I get it, or whether it's something super concrete, I get it. But just keep tabs of what's going on, but have a certain amount of sensibility and rationale in terms of, is the data there? Is the evidence there? But because of the speed of things, because technology is changing so quickly, 3-4 years ago, when you're talking about AI, it was like this goofy, shiny thing, but now it's upfront and concrete. But if you're not keeping your eyes on that as an opportunity, then at some point you might miss the boat. And the way that things are accelerating these days, it took us, I'm just making up these numbers, 4 years to get to our current state of AI providing business value. Well, guess what? The next AI might not be seen in a 4 years trajectory. It could happen in the next 2.5. So definitely the second point is definitely keep tabs of what's going on. Assign someone on your team, someone that has a good researcher or investigative mindset to watch this for you. You don't have to be inundated all the time, but if you're assigning someone, just say, hey, can you do me a favor? Keep track of what's going on in the industry and share what you think are like the top five articles that resonate to us. Share that. In fact, maybe you can brand it and market that and have some fun with that as well. Another thing, I think the last thing too, is making sure that you're building the right capabilities within your own teams. It's one thing to definitely provide service and support to enable the business, but that doesn't mean that you need to be in this reactive state. I think because learning data is now getting closer to business data, where we're finally attaining this holy grail where we can measure the impact of learning with business and then the other way around, that's becoming really, really concrete and true. The thing is, though, you're going to see things that the business might never see, or you're going to see things way before the business might see it. So because of data and maybe other factors, I think we do have a responsibility to make sure that from a responsibility and capabilities perspective, there are areas where we need to be reactive, got it. But there are areas where the business, again, now L&D is the table. Forget the darn seat or chair. We're now the table from another wacky metaphor perspective. The expectations are higher. So if you find those proactive data points or information or insights to inform and consult the business, do that, do that, do that, and really reform, I think, the presence, the intention of what learning or L&D or talent HR really means to support and enable the business. And most importantly, the individuals within the business as well. So I think that last point, again, is making sure that we're finding the right capabilities that's aligned to some of these changes. So hopefully that helps, Liz.
Yes, that's some great insight and some great information. Mark, that's all the questions that we have prepared for today. My final question for you is there anything else you'd like to add?
The only thing I can say is definitely keep track of opportunities and channels like the CLO series. I think it's important because I think the way that Liz, you and team have identified some of these folks, there's so many great gifts of knowledge to share. Maybe not today from mine, but anyway, I think there's so many great things to be sharing. So definitely keep that. But if anything too, share this with other folks. It's okay to have the water cooler chat or just a succinct brief email to your team just says, hey, I learned this really interesting thing, et cetera, what are other folks' thoughts? So keep that going, keep the sharing going, keep the conversations going. Because if we don't, you know, we might lose that table position, so to speak. And then think broadly and act broadly. And it's not just about your team, your company, your vertical. Share, share, share as best as you can.
Absolutely. Sharing is learning.
Right.
Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today here on Voices of CLO. Thank you so much for your fantastic insight and advice, and to our Voices of CLO listeners. Thank you so much for listening to this special episode in partnership with Cornerstone. Until next time, take care.
Thank you.